So how wonderful that we now have reached the 13th section of the framework at the top of the fourth column, where in the matrix chapter we see a new heaven and a new earth. And in the corresponding section in Genesis, Cain declares how he's not his brother's keeper. He denies all love for and care of his brother. And instead in the text, and this is 541, 922, invents new forms of evil. And the 13th chapter of the textbook teaching Christian Science is virtually where God makes a new covenant with the children of Israel, and therefore with us, that he will put his laws in their inward parts and write them in their minds, and they shall no more teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for all shall know me, from the least of them to the greatest. Teaching, in other words, has passed over from the objective sense of it seeming to come humanly to us from outside to the subjective sense of its coming divinely from within. And so the old sense of a divided heaven and earth passes away, and the realization of their being forever one and indivisible takes its place. And therefore, of course, there's no more sea, no more dragons, drowning flood, no more elementary latent error, the source of all error's visible forms. In fact, no more mythical psychic unconscious claiming to be the source of man's conscious experience. Instead, as the text says, this is 573.21, the subjective state by which we see all things new, or all things as they really are. In other words, inwardly and outwardly, we are conscious of earth being born of heaven, of man being born of God, not of earth, man, coming up out of the dark, mythological, unconscious, subterranean matrix or sea. And this, says the text, 573.28, is our foretaste of absolute Christian Science. Absolute Christian Science? The term the text uses to denote that there's no more evil to be eliminated, that the last enemy death is overcome. Hence, as in the case of Jesus, the resurrection of the body prior to its complete translation. Now note the terms in the matrix at this point, soul and life, signifying the sinless body, soul, of deathless life, life. And look how we're told on 572.25 that this is actually man's present possibility. The possibility, that is, of his not passing the transitional stage in human experience called death, but already seeing the reality of God's creation, a new heaven and earth. Do you remember at the end of the Footsteps of Truth chapter how it says that absolute Christian Science may not be achieved prior to the change called death? Suggesting, of course, that it may be. Right here we see that indeed it may be. The inference surely is that of our having won our right to the tree of life, isn't it? And this, of course, leads us to the glorious 14th section of the unfoldment, where we actually see this reality of absolute science, where we see coming down from God out of heaven the sublime truth of heaven and earth, God and man, divinity and humanity, forever one and inseparable. And the form this takes, of course, is the holy four-square city or civilization itself, the divinely civilized human society, which is the way God knows the human race to be. At the same time, the wonderful 14th chapter of the textbook Recapitulation teaches us what God is in this same absolute science. How beautiful, then, that the 14th chapter gives us the sevenfold order of the synonymous terms mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, known to us for convenience as the seven, and the 14th apocalypse section gives us, through the symbol of the holy city, the idea of how God operates universally as the Word, Christ, Christianity, science, known to us as the four. And just as Recapitulation is a summary of all that the textbook has previously unfolded, so the Holy City, with its 12 open gates, is itself a summary of all that's been happening to us from the beginning of the chapter, or when we first set out on our journey through the city's 12 gates to the point where we are now, in the heart of the city itself, having won our right to the tree of life. And the essential nature of this immaculate matrix or mother city, it's called, isn't it, the Bride, the Lamb's Wife. Obeying that rule back there of lamb-like self-abnegation, you remember. This means that we wed the holy city as our own universal spiritual reality, or our own God-given individuality or self. Hence what it's really all about, says 575 line 2, is the true sense of love. The true sense of love, capital L, wedded to its own spiritual idea, which is, of course, love, little l. In other words, it's love God and love man, inconceivable apart from each other. And therefore this bridal city is indeed the final statement of the church or body of brotherly love, the real truth about our world, that to which each one of us individually must find himself wedded as his universal ideal or his bride. But no one can possibly achieve this standpoint except as the sacrificial lamb of love, offering up the personal sense of self for his individual selfhood in divine science. And thus the city at this point, called the city four square, is the Father's gift to us of what we truly are. What I am in my unity and indivisibility as the bride which the Father gives away for me to claim as my own. And what else then but the marriage feast? Because as the text says on 575:4, this revelation will destroy forever the physical plagues imposed by material sense. Now note that it's specifically the city of divine science, and how it's defined on line 18 as our city, signifying our undividedness from God and from our brother man. It's indeed the bestowal of our individuality as this obtains in divine science. But we cannot and must not leave it there, or we shall find ourselves involved with personal boundaries, barriers, egocentric walls and limitations, which we certainly must not allow. So we come forward at once to the next section, the 15th section, where the city is called the city of our God. In other words, as Jesus implied when he told them how he came forth from the Father and circled back to the Father, that which comes to us from God as a city four square must immediately be given back to God as God's very own, or as the city of our God. Otherwise, we're certainly not man as God's reflection, because the word reflect means to bend or give back, doesn't it? And so our city, the city of divine science, in the 14th section, must be acknowledged to be the city of our God, the city of Christian science, in the 15th. Christian science, 577:18. For only then has this spiritual, holy habitation no boundary nor limit. It's 577:12. No circumscribing barriers or walls. The square has become a circle, in other words. The four equal sides have become four cardinal points, the points of the compass reaching out infinitely in all directions at once. Which means that our individuality in divine science, just think of it, becomes totally universal in Christian science, healing and restoring the whole world to God. Clearly, individuality, which is less than universal, is in some measure personal, obsessed with boundaries and limits, and is not of the nature of the divine principle love. And so, like the prophet Elias, defined in the glossary as Christian science is that which restores all things where they belong, and so heals and transfigures the entire human concept. And this is why at this point, the anthropomorphic Jehovah, who in the Garden of Eden put Adam into that deep hypnotic sleep and apparently cut him up into an Adam and an Eve, is said to have been transfigured. 576, line 30. And why, as the text says, male and female, Adam and Eve, and no longer two wedded individuals, but two individual natures in one. And this compounded spiritual individuality reflects God as Father, Mother, not as a corporeal being. And so here at last, man is given back his womanhood simultaneously as God is given back his man. At last, Elohim and Jehovah are seen to be one undivided deity as the Lord God Almighty, and therefore the whole human concept is redeemed, translated from mortality to immortality, passed over from death to life. And it's why, of course, the corresponding chapter in the textbook at this point is Genesis, where the Elohim record of the 7 days of creation redeems, through reversal and translation, the Jehovistic record in the second part of the chapter. In a word, there's now no temple therein. 576:10. That is, no material structure or body in which to worship God. In the words of Science and Health back there on 249:19 in the chapter Footsteps of Truth, it's where organization and time, temple, tempus, time, are found to have nothing to do with life. In terms of the career of Mary Baker Eddy, what in respect of her church organization she reluctantly called laws of limitation for a Christian Scientist, are now completely obsolete. All need for outside maternal control is finished, for the Church now is none other than the body of Christ, the body of God himself, the very city of our God. The Church, universal and triumphant, the structure of truth and love itself. In fact, the final form of the body of brotherly love, healing, and saving the world from sin and death. Paul puts it wonderfully at the end of his epistle to the Hebrews. We are come, he says, unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, unto the general assembly of the church of the firstborn. So let brotherly love continue, he says in closing. How marvelous, therefore, that the synonyms at this point in the 15th section of the matrix, you see them there in the chart, should be divine mind and love, corresponding to the first and seventh days of creation in the tree of life above. Because what is now wholly redeemed, as we look back at the tree of life as the opposite of as we look back at the tree of death as the opposite of the tree of life, is first the mythical breakaway of man from God, the opposite of the first day of mind, and secondly, the breakaway of woman from man, the opposite of the seventh day of love. The parallels are so beautifully scientific and exact. Even to where Cain, in the corresponding 15th Genesis section, is identified simply with ignorance. The mark set upon him is the mark of the beast, which is the mark of the nothingness of ignorance. In fact, this is all there is to the entire tree of death, simply supposition or ignorance of the tree of life. The one, just the negation, the suppositional opposite of the other, never real, never substantial, never actually present at all. So it remains, just touch on the final 16th section. And this in the Apocalypse, we know, is the spiritual interpretation in Christian Science of the Bible's 23rd Psalm. In Genesis, it's the banishment of Cain into the oblivion of the land of Nod. While in the textbook as a whole, it's the 16th chapter of the Apocalypse itself. In the 23rd Psalm, as we have it originally in the Old Testament, the term Lord, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, refers specifically to Jehovah, doesn't it? But in the Science and Health interpretation of the 23rd Psalm, the Lord has become divine love. And this, of course, is Jehovah as he truly, eternally is, not as that anthropomorphic, personal misconception of deity who is responsible for hypnotizing Adam in the Garden of Eden into believing he's divided into an Adam and an Eve. The spiritually translated reality of Jehovah is indeed that very I am that I am, which revealed himself to Moses on Mount Horeb as the means of liberating Israel from Egypt. This is Jehovah, already and forever one with Elohim, constituting the divine I am of every one of us, whereby humanly we are not as gods, but are reflections of the one absolute God. This is what brings us out of Egypt, frees us from sexual subdivisions, and makes Jehovah, accenting the true idea of the human, coincident with Elohim, the divine. So in the Christian Science version of the 23rd Psalm, do we see how the term love is printed in small capital letters? A big capital used only when the word begins a sentence. It's as if what this signifies is love capitalized and love uncapitalized brought together in a single conception. Like, for example, on page 575, where we read of love, capital L, being wedded to its own spiritual idea, which of course is love, little L. Or where, in the Lord's Prayer, love, uncapitalized, is shown to be the reflection of love, capitalized. Now, in the Bible, both Jehovah and Jesus are called the Lord, aren't they? And isn't this because what Jesus has to prove, and therefore what we have to prove, is that he is not God in the form of man? The meaning of the word anthropomorphic, but rather is man in the form of God, which is what the spelling of the word love in these small capital letters seems to signify. In other words, God and man, indivisibly one, incapable of being torn apart. Therefore, where we dwell, says the text, is in the consciousness of this love forever, where there's no longer any want. The basic mortal problem of I want, I desire, I lust after what appears to be objective to me over there is finally solved, because the kingdom of God, the divinely provident matrix city, is, as Jesus says, within each one of us individually and subjectively, and therefore there's nothing to want. On the other hand, Cain the murderer, in the final section in Genesis, is relegated to the land of Nod, sent to dwell in oblivion forever, because he's of the nature of ignorance, the mere negation of all that is actually present and real. It's clearly impossible to slay him with the sword, then. Ignorance can only be destroyed by filling up the apparent void with the understanding of what is true, finding the tree of life to be the actual reality of man's being instead of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, or the tree of death. And so as Cain goes out into the land of Nod, with him goes also the entire build-up of all merely material human knowledge, such as the material evolutionary theories of Darwinism, all humanly argued theories of philosophy, embryology, the genetic DNA code, biology, physiology, and the mythology of psychology, as the text enumerates them, or rather implies them. All translated into the one divine science of being. The science which is back of all the world sciences, and whose embodiment, therefore, is that infinite diversity of identity in unity, the system of God's ideas that is denominated Christian Science. Well, there the story closes of the divinely bestowed step-by-step means of individual, collective, and world salvation. It's a glorious unfoldment, isn't it? And one which we will love to go on pondering and pondering more and more in order to make it increasingly our own subjectively, and therefore the very substance of our lives. So let's close our survey of these two remarkable chapters, Genesis and the Apocalypse, by reading the message in Revelation 3 to the church in Philadelphia, the church of brotherly love, to whom the key to the understanding of these chapters, therefore the key to the understanding of the spiritual origin of man, therefore the key to the salvation of humanity, is given. It starts verse 7, Revelation 3. And to the angel of the church of Philadelphia write, These things saith he that is holy, he that is true, he that hath the key of David, he that openeth and no man shutteth and no man openeth. I know thy works. Behold, I have set before you an open door. A later on, an open book, isn't it? And no man can shut it. Thou hast a little strength, and hast kept my word. Well, with some measure of spiritual strength, we are seeking to keep his word, aren't we, as we move through the 12 gates of the holy city to inherit the tree of life. And hast not denied my name. Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan to come and worship before thy feet, those two feet, those two foundations of truth and love which alone enable us to move forward on our 16-fold journey. And know that I have loved thee, because thou hast kept the word of my patience, I will also keep thee from the hour of temptation which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. It's referring, of course, to the great world tribulation that comes in these so-called latter days, when the 20th century and therefore the 6th millennium of the history of civilization closes and mankind finds itself standing on the threshold of the 7th millennium corresponding to the 7th day of creation. Goes on, behold, I come quickly. And that really feels like what's going on today, doesn't it? And everything seems to be happening at such an incredibly accelerating rate. Hold fast that thou hast, that no man take thy crown. Thy crown of 12 stars, which the woman, symbol of generic man, is crowned, and which, we're told, typify the 12 gates of the holy city. Him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God. Overcometh what? Well, primarily the mythical belief that we've ever broken away from our anchorage in God and that we are revolving in orbits of our own outside of God. And I will write upon him the name of my God. The name of my God. The name of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. And the name of the city of my God. The name of the city of my God. The name of the Word, Christ, Christianity, science. The two names together of what we call the 7 and the 4, constituting the very essence of the two chapters, Genesis and the Apocalypse, and emphasizing respectively the manhood and womanhood of the one Son of God. So, the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem, which cometh down out of heaven from my God. And I will write upon him my new name. And what today is the new name? Of the Son of Man, it's of course Christian science, the system of ideas to which divine metaphysics is reduced for the purposes of human comprehension. combining in itself both the range of synonymous names for God, teaching what God is, and the name of the city of God, teaching the operational aspect of God in terms of the universe itself, and signifying the beautiful, immaculate matrix concept of all that we've been concerned with in this particular study as unlocked by the key to the scriptures. Well, finally then, in the words of the hymn, hasn't the time surely come for the centuries to break, for the earthbound to wake, for God to be glorified? Who doth his will, his likeness still is satisfied. Why satisfied? Because the problem of I want, because I believe I do not already have, is, as we reach the end of the chapter of the Apocalypse, spiritually and scientifically solved.
End of recording.